Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel. Yaki on Liberalism, Part 7. This should conclude this long series on Yaki's view of liberalism. We're reading from Imperium at the top of page 220 here. We're going to pick up. Hegel posited a three-stage development of mankind from the natural community through the bourgeois community to the state. His state theory is thoroughly organic, and his definition of the bourgeois is quite appropriate for the 20th century. To him, the bourgeois is the man who does not wish to leave the sphere of internal political security, who sets himself up with his sanctified private property as an individual against the whole, who finds a substitute for his political nullity in the fruits of peace and possessions and perfect security in his enjoyment of them, who therefore wishes to dispense with courage and remain secure from the possibility of violent death. He described the true liberal with these words. So here toward the end, Yaki gives yet another facet of liberalism. He describes it as bourgeois, as true liberalism, is this idea of bourgeois, and specifically Hegel's idea, the individual against the whole. Now, referring back to the political thinkers that he listed the last time, Montaigne, Machiavelli, Hobbes, Leibniz, several others, the political thinkers mentioned do not enjoy popularity with the great masses of human beings. As long as things are going well, most people do not wish to hear talk of power struggles, violence, wars, or theories relating to them. Thus, in the 18th and 19th centuries was developed the attitude that political thinkers, and Machiavelli was the prime victim, were wicked men, atavistic, bloodthirsty. The simple statement that wars would always continue was sufficient to put the speaker down as a person who wanted wars to continue. To draw attention to the vast impersonal rhythm of war and peace showed a sick mind with moral deficiency and emotional taint. To describe facts was held to be wishing them and creating them. As late as the 20th century, anyone pointing out the political nullity of the, quote, League of Nations, unquote, was a prophet of despair. Rationalism is anti-historical. Political thinking is applied history. In peace, it is unpopular to mention war. In war, it is unpopular to mention peace. The theory which becomes most quickly popular is one which praises existing things, and the tendency they supposedly illustrate as obviously the best order and as preordained by all foregoing history. Thus, Hegel was anathema to the intellectuals because of his state orientation, which made him a, quote, reactionary, unquote, and also because he refused to join the revolutionary crowd. In that paragraph, Yaki once again emphasizes that rationalism is the opposite of political thinking, that rationalism is anti-historical, that political thinking is applied history. He sees political thinking as the utmost, as all important. Because he's concerned about political organisms, and he sees rationalism as the root of liberalism, as opposed to that. Since most people wish to hear only soporific talk about politics and not demanding calls to action, and since in democratic conditions it matters to political technics what most people wish to hear, democratic politicians evolved in the 19th century a whole dialectic of party politics. The idea was to examine the held of action from a, quote, disinterested, unquote, standpoint, moral, scientific, or economic, and to kind that the opponent was immoral, unscientific, uneconomic, In fact, he was political. This was devilishness that must be combated. One's own standpoint was entirely, quote, non-political, unquote. Politics was a word of reproach in the economic age. Curiously, however, in certain situations, usually those involving foreign relations, an unpolitical, quote, unpolitical, unquote, could also be a term of abuse, meaning the man so described lacked skill in negotiating. The party politician also had to feign unwillingness to accept office. Finally, a demonstration of carefully arranged, quote, popular will, unquote, broke down his reluctance, and he consented to, quote, serve. This was described as Machiavellism, but obviously Machiavelli was a political thinker and not a camouflager. A book by a party politician does not read like The Prince, but praises the entire human race, except certain perverse people, the author's opponents. A political here, what Iocchi is getting at, I would translate as taking your own side. The liberal is someone who won't take his own side, to harken back to concepts about liberalism that we've talked about previously before Iocchi. As Iocchi puts it, a liberal is someone who values their personal security over violent death. And today, this idea of not taking your own side, I would just add, has progressed to the point of whites being anti-white, that the leadership, the politicians, the party politicians, as he calls them, hyphenated, have progressed to the point where they have to adopt this pose of being anti-white, against whites as a group, in order to get elected. Actually, Machiavelli's book is defensive in tone, justifying politically the conduct of certain statesmen by giving examples drawn from foreign invasions of Italy. During Machiavelli's century, Italy was invaded at different times by Frenchmen, Germans, Spaniards, and Turks. When the French Revolutionary armies occupied Prussia and coupled humanitarian sentiments of the rights of man with brutality and large-scale looting, Hegel and Fichte restored Machiavelli once again to respect as a thinker. He represented a means of defense against a foe armed with a humanitarian ideology. Machiavelli showed the actual role played by verbal sentiments in politics. One can say that there are three possible attitudes toward human conduct from the point of evaluating its motives: the sentimental, the realistic, and the cynical. The sentimental imputes a good motive to everybody, the cynical a bad motive, and the realistic simply seeks the facts. When a sentimentalist, for example a liberal, enters politics, he becomes perforce a hypocrite. The ultimate exposure of this hypocrisy creates cynicism. Part of the spiritual sickness following the First World War was a wave of cynicism which arose from the transparent, revolting, and incredible hypocrisy of the little men who were presiding over affairs at that time. Machiavelli had, however, an incorruptible intellect and did not write in a cynical spirit. He sought to portray the anatomy of politics with its peculiar problems and tensions, inner and outer. To the fantastic mental illness of rationalism, hard facts are regrettable things, and to talk about them is to create them. A tiny politician of the liberal type even sought to prevent talk about the Third World War after the Second. Liberalism is, in one word, weakness. It wants every day to be a birthday, life to be a long party. Very interesting observations in that paragraph there about the sentimental, the realistic, and the cynical, and how the sentimental, when revealed by the realistic, turns into the cynical. And also how Iocchi here reduces liberalism to a single word, weakness. Last page here of what Iocchi has to say about liberalism, page 223. The inexorable movement of time, destiny, history, the cruelty of accomplishment, sternness, heroism, sacrifice, superpersonal ideas, these are the enemy. Liberalism is an escape from hardness into softness, from masculinity into femininity, from history to herd grazing, from reality into herbivorous dreams, from destiny into happiness. Nietzsche, in his last and greatest work, designated the 18th century as the century of feminism, and immediately mentioned Rousseau, the leader of the mass escape from reality. Feminism itself, what is it but a means of feminizing man? If it makes woman manlike, it does so only by transforming man first into a creature whose only concern is with his personal economics and his relation to, quote, society, unquote. In other words, a woman. Society is the element of woman. It is static and formal. Its contests are purely personal and are free from the possibility of heroism and violence. Conversation, not action. Formality, not deeds. How different is the idea of rank used in connection with a social affair from when it is applied on a battlefield? In the field, it is fate-laden. In the salon, it is vain and pompous. A war is fought for control. Social contests are inspired by feminine vanity and jealousy to show that one is, quote, better, unquote, than someone else. And yet, what does liberalism do ultimately to woman? It puts a uniform on her and calls her a soldier. This ridiculous performance but illustrates the eternal fact that history is masculine, that its stern demands cannot be evaded, that the fundamental realities cannot be renounced, even by the most elaborate make-believe. Liberalistic tampering with sexual polarity only wreaks havoc on the souls of individuals, confusing and distorting them. But the man-woman and the woman-man it creates are both subject to the higher destiny of history. Interesting, I had not heard that Nietzsche had called the 18th century the century of feminism before, but it made me think, what would you call the 19th century then? What was the most significant thing about the 19th century? And I would say it was Jewish emancipation from the beginning of that century until the end. And by the end, it was complete. And by Jewish emancipation, of course, that means that the political equality, which meant that Jews were free to take over society. And by the 20th century, which has been called the Jewish century, as you could call it, the century of Jewish rule. So in conclusion here, it's incredible how much he packed into just 15 pages. This is 15 pages out of a total of 619 in his book Imperium. Although we did go back and start with what he had to say about political organisms, and that really is at the heart of it, is his concept of political organisms and how he sees liberalism at odds with that and dissolving that and disintegrating that. He saw liberalism as an extension of rationalism, rationalism being a school or a movement of philosophy, and so he saw it rooted in the European mind and as an outgrowth of European thinking. He wrote at one point, every rationalistic political or state theory regards man as, quote, good, unquote, by nature. And I think through his sarcasm, he implied that he saw that as a false premise, that he saw that as really the root of the problem. He traced liberalism's beginning to the mid-18th century, so the middle of that century of feminism. And he traced it to John Locke via Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who he mentioned there toward the very end of his section on liberalism. He saw society, liberalism, as weakening the state in order to make it subservient to society. And he always liked to write society in quotes. He saw society as a creation of liberalism. This idea, this loose grouping of free, independent groups and individuals. And it contrasted strongly with his ideal, which was of community or an organism. He described several times liberalism as a mere negative or as totally negative, not for anything, not advancing or advocating anything. And he saw it as an opposition, as disliking authority, opposed to and by authority. Besides Locke and Rousseau, Jeremy Bentham was another significant thinker that he mentioned by name. And he identified Bentham's rule about the greatest happiness of the greatest number being the sort of goal of life. And he mocked that, that happiness was the purpose of life, and traced it to Bentham. And he saw in that the roots of this economic materialistic aspect of liberalism. And one of the problems with that being that it allows wealthy individuals to become more powerful than the state itself. He wrote, "In earlier times, war peoples had subjugated trading peoples, but no longer. Now trading peoples step out as the masters of the earth." The purest expression of the doctrine of liberalism was probably that of Benjamin Constant. There were a couple of sections on Constant that I found in Wikipedia describing a Constant that really explained why Yaki had his idea of liberalism, why he described the things about liberalism the way he did, and why he nominated, why Constant loomed so large in his mind as this expression, this purest expression of liberalism. Let me read here two paragraphs from Wikipedia. "Constant's repeated denunciation of despotism pervaded his critique of French political philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Abbé de Malble. These writers, influential to the French Revolution, according to Constant, mistook authority for liberty and approved any means of extending the action of authority." In other words, Constant was sort of correcting Rousseau. This is where Yaki's idea that authority and liberalism are opposed to each other. It's Constant who pointed that out and saw authority as the enemy, as opposed to Rousseau, who didn't see it that way, thought authority was a good thing. And another paragraph here. "Moreover, Constant believed that in the modern world, commerce was superior to war. He attacked Napoleon's martial appetite on the grounds that it was illiberal and no longer suited to modern commercial social organization. Ancient liberty tended to be warlike, whereas a state organized on the principles of modern liberty would be at peace with all peaceful nations." This is this sort of utopian idea that war would be ended by putting economics and materialism on a pedestal. The fact that Constant was a Huguenot gave me an opportunity there to go off into a bit of a tangent about the Huguenots and something to look into in the future in more detail, I think. Yaki described liberalism as always and only a disintegrating force. And I caught on to that early on when I saw his description of political organisms and how he saw liberalism as sort of outside of that definition of political organisms, and how by adopting liberalism that it would disintegrate and destroy ultimately political organisms. About freedom, he wrote, freedom is one of the most common things that's associated with liberalism, but in Yaki's view, it was a relatively minor paragraph or two. He wrote, "It is a mere critique, not a living idea," speaking of liberalism. "Its great word, freedom, is a negative. It means, in fact, freedom from authority, disintegration of the organism. In its last stages, it produces social atomism, in which not only the authority of the state is combated, but even the authority of society and the family." And that's where I pointed out that at the very same time, Theodore Adorno and his co-authors were writing up The Authoritarian Personality, which attacked any type of group identity amongst Europeans above, from the family up. And whereas Yaki was talking about liberalism as individualism, as egoism, which is just this exaggerated sense of self-importance, which does seem to fit and play into the aspect of European personality that describes liberalism or that characterizes liberalism. What he left out was how that is encouraged by the group identity, the identification that Europeans have with something larger than themselves, being pushed down, being pathologized and demonized, and that naturally the reaction to that is to retreat into individualism, retreat into humanism, to squirt out in those two different directions. Now, Yaki himself distinguished liberalism from what he referred to as alien poisoning. He said it's necessary to diagnose even now the serious illness of the Western civilization as liberalism complicated with alien poisoning. So he saw those two things as distinct, separate. He talked right after that about how liberalism used the law in defense of economics, in defense of vast anonymous wealth. And he saw that it wasn't power corrupting men, but it was, in fact, vast anonymous wealth which corrupts. And then he went into ethical socialism, what Spengler, the philosopher, as he referred to him, called Prussianism. What Spengler wrote about the Prussian spirit, this aristocratic virtue of which few are possessed, and also called it a proud and exclusive socialism for men of race, for the elective life, I see that as describing the Aryan spirit, what has always been associated with Aryans. And in fact, the spirit, he was describing the spirit of National Socialism, which had just come to power in Germany at the time he was writing. And that Yaki, being a student of Spengler and an admirer of Spengler, himself must have considered himself some form of National Socialist, a sympathizer of National Socialism. That explains his use of the word authority. It was a very unpopular thing, of course, to be a supporter of National Socialism as an American in the wake of the war. They were the enemy of Americans. That's what the propaganda had convinced people of. And so it's not that Yaki, I think, was being a coward in not just openly stating his beliefs. He was fairly openly stating his beliefs if you understand how to read this. And I admit that in my first reading of this, this all went right over my head. You have to dig into the details here. Who thought what? Where are these ideas coming from? And see this deeper meaning to understand it and to understand why Yaki should be seen as a sympathizer with National Socialism. And the deeper roots of National Socialism, the spirit behind it, even though his racial understanding probably isn't compatible with it. True liberalism is bourgeois, and that's this idea of Hegel's, that the individual against the whole. This is where he ties together this individualism and seeing that as true, that it's weakness. Going back to Revello Oliver's description, he described liberals as being childish. He equated liberalism with childishness. Oliver recommended Yaki and said that it's an important work. It's a work we must study and ponder if we would act intelligently in our time. And I'm not so sure about that. Now that I've taken the effort to read it, I don't know if I would recommend it to others that it's a must read. If you're interested in philosophy, sure. But it takes an awful lot of effort, and there are simpler explanations. There's easier things to read. Kevin MacDonald is someone I would recommend, or even Revello Oliver is more accessible. And I recommend before I'd recommend Yaki. Not that I discourage you from reading Yaki. It's just there's more accessible descriptions.